Welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. As instructional coaches and school leaders, you have a challenge to guide continuous teacher growth that promotes student success. This podcast looks to support you with strategies from our experienced guests and insights that I've gathered across many years. I'm thrilled you're here. Thanks for listening.
Another look at educator beliefs and behaviors. I recently posted a podcast with Dr. Kyle Copes, a secondary school principal at the Metropolitan School in Frankfurt, Germany. He explored how the concept of student laziness has to be seen as a myth. Copes shared that if an educator sees a child as lazy, they have a get out of jail free card. That means there's no need for the educator to take action, inquire, poke, or prod to try and figure out what is standing in the way of the student's learning. Today's guests offered another belief that we have to question. Lori Putnam, the superintendent of schools in St. Cloud, Minnesota, wrote an opinion piece for Education Week titled, "Stop Saying These Kids Don't Care About School." I'm excited that Lori's joining us today to share her thinking. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you so much. We're glad to be here.
Excited that you could join us. So, Lori, I'm wondering for starters if you just tell people a little bit about the St. Cloud School District.
Absolutely. St. Cloud is about an hour west of Minneapolis, which is often what people might know for Minnesota, if I'm familiar with the state. We are the 16th largest school district. And we are surrounded by very tiny districts. So we have much more in common with our urban partners. We're about 25% EL students, primarily Somali and Hispanic. And we are about 67% free and reduced lunch and about 25% students of color.
I know from your background, little search that I did, that you've spent time as a school counselor, an assistant principal, and assistant superintendent prior to your role as superintendent. And I'm wondering, what are some of the insights or understandings that you've reached across those roles concerning how beliefs influence our educator actions or behaviors?
Yeah, I've been blessed to, as you say, have a variety of different roles. And I am particularly grateful for starting out as a school counselor. I think that perspective has allowed me time one-on-one with students, one-on-one with staff, in small groups, and in settings where people have the opportunity to feel safe, right? To share what it is that's on their heart and their minds. And I've carried that approach to leadership in terms of starting with a relationship first. And so I've watched as over the years I've been in education, people have been able to and been willing to share their beliefs, their perspectives. And so as I've watched that, I really come to understand that we lead, we teach, we counsel who we are as humans, right? So who I am as a human comes out in every leadership decision I make. The beliefs that I hold about kids, about adults, they come out, right? Whether I know it or not, whether I'm being intentional about it or not. So that's really what has resonated and really sunk in for me, is that we don't get to separate those two things as much as we may want to or think that when I show up as a professional in an education setting, I somehow become a different person because I'm being paid. That is absolutely not the case. So I believe it's our responsibility, right? As people who are paid to teach and care for the students, that we are very clear about who we are and that we are very clear about how those interactions impact those around us.
So the beliefs influence us either consciously or unconsciously.
Absolutely. And I would argue, right, more unconsciously than not.
Yeah.
Unless we're really thoughtful about it.
It's really why reflection is so critical.
It is, right? And we know that especially as social media increases, right, as the busyness of our lives increase, we know the demands on our teachers are so high nowadays, right? Schools, we learned through the pandemic that schools are really a place where students get the majority of their, some students, right, get the majority of their needs met, and how little time we carve out in a work day, or even how little time, unless we're super intentional about it, we have in our own personal lives for that amount of reflection to get really clear about who we are and what we believe.
In your article, you share several ways that kids don't care narrative undermines the needed actions that educators in the community needs to take. And I'm wondering if you'd share some of those mistakes that we make because of having that belief.
Absolutely. You know, what the podcast that you did with your previous guest really resonated. And I very much see the interplay between the conversations. You know, when we are as adults, whether we're educators or community leaders, or even as parents, when we are coming into situations assuming that our students don't care or believing that, we put the onus onto the child, right? Onto the people who have the very least control over their situation. And then when we are able to put the responsibility onto the other, onto the student, it does give us as adults the opportunity to just say, well, I tried and they don't care. Oh, there's another one, right? And so again, I very much believe that the people who work in our schools are there because they love and care for kids, right? They're motivated by success, right? That's what we know from psychology research, is that people are motivated by success, autonomy, mastery, relationship. So I believe that our teachers want students to succeed. And I also believe that those sneaky thoughts, right, those unknowing beliefs come out, and whether consciously or not, you know, there's that, well, they just don't care, I'm just gonna, you know, I'll go to the kids who do care. And then we continue to, you know, to bypass the kids who need us most.
Yeah. And then when we go to the kids who do care, it tends to reinforce that belief that we cut the other kids short on.
Absolutely. Right. And
unknowingly, you know, again.
Unknowingly, right? And I think you know, this may be a risky thing to say, depending on the perspective of our listeners, but I also believe that, right, that narrative gets overlaid on top of race and class.
For sure.
Right. Just like, you know, all of the interactions that we have, particularly in America, right, are overlaid around those. And, you know, I'll give you an example. My son is a senior. He's white. He comes from a privileged household with highly educated parents. He's in the district where I lead. And he has not done homework. He has told me very clearly he has not done homework outside of school since his junior year, right? Getting fine grades, going on to college next year. But if you had to ask me, does my son care about school? I would tell you no. But there is not a single teacher who would look past him, right? Who would then make that who, if you ask somebody who in your class doesn't care, they wouldn't pick my child. Yeah. Right. But the kids who are showing up and maybe their work isn't done because they have, you know, worked all evening, they're home taking care of kids because mom or dad or grandma, whoever, can't let them go to school. Right. Those are the kids who are socioeconomically deprived, often overlaid with race, at least in St. Cloud. Right. Our students of our color and our students living in poverty go hand in hand. Almost exactly. And I spoke earlier, our district is about 65% students of color. And those are the kids who our teachers are going to say they don't care, right? Yeah. Because those externalized behaviors show up in ways that are then coded as apathy. And then we just give them less and less attention, and people assume harmful things or beneficial things, depending on who they're looking at.
I thought of my upcoming conversation with you today, earlier today, when I was reading through a set of comments that a administrator at secondary level had collected from teachers about things they needed to take into consideration. And one comment that came back was that that they needed to move away from their 90-minute periods because kids didn't have a long attention span.
Mm. Yeah,
but that's a nice easy way to bypass the accountability for planning and directing learning by being able
absolutely
to put that issue out there.
Yeah, that's a great example.
So, what are some things that schools can do to challenge that "I don't care" narrative? And I'm wondering if there's some examples of things you've had happen in your district that are doing that for you.
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing that we can do, which is something that I can occasionally struggle with, I know about me, is that I can be judgmental. I do know that. You know, I think one of the first things we need to do is to create the space where it's safe to acknowledge that we have those feelings, right? Where we have those perceptions. And that's not easy to do because vulnerability isn't always something that we honor or create space for. And truly, there are people who it's just not a safe space as an adult to say, this is what I believe about kids, right? But until we are able to create a space where people can acknowledge that and we can start to work through it and unpack that, it's never going to change, right? So I think first and foremost, as leaders especially, or even as colleagues, right, teacher to teacher, it's our responsibility to be able to create a place where we can be forthright and know that it's our first thought doesn't have to be our last thought, right? And that we can listen to that first thought without judgment and then enter into a conversation about being curious, right? I wonder if, have you considered, right? So I think that's the an adaptive piece that we, you know, that I continue to work on in our district and that I think would help. You know, we've also done some technical work. A couple examples of success is, you know, at Lincoln Elementary School, which is about 99% students living in poverty. It is one of our racially isolated schools as identified by the Minnesota Department of Education. Comes from a high incarceration rate in the community. Our principal and her team noticed that there was an attendance issue, as we are seeing nationally, right? In the U.S., there's after the pandemic, we're struggling with attendance, consistent attendance. And so she decided that she was going to start offering jobs. And so it's a fourth and fifth grade school. And so students can apply for jobs. And the adults teach students how to fill out applications. And there are jobs such as barista, morning news announcement anchor, computer technician, custodian, the botanist, right? And so the students are also paired with a mentor, which is that critical part, right, about relationship. Yeah. And so the student knows that if they don't come to school, their job doesn't get done. Somebody notices, the community that depends on them is let down. And so and then the kids learn the skill and they feel really good, right? It goes back to those relationship, mastery, autonomy. And so we've seen incredible success there. And in a place where it would be very easy to say, these kids just don't care, right? They're not coming to school, they just don't care. They come, they have behaviors, they just don't care, right? And that is absolutely not the case. And our students have proven it. The staff have proven it.
Added to it that the parents don't care.
You know, absolutely. I think we see that more at, I think that's more a narrative at elementary, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the principals gave me some feedback on the article and said exactly what your comment was, right? He's a principal of a P2 school. And he said, you know, here we see, well, the parents just don't care. They don't come to conferences. No wonder their kid's failing. Again, shifting the blame to those who really, you know, I firmly believe, one of my core beliefs is that people are doing the best they can with what they've got, including our teachers, our parents, our kids.
Yep.
And it's on us to remove those barriers to help them do better.
Yeah, that's the belief that has to drive our work. You have another example of something that you implemented in the district?
Yeah, you know, we have an alternative learning center. It serves our students as well as seven other surrounding districts. And it's for students who are behind in credits, pregnant, homeless, the kinds of barriers that really do get in the way of typical success in education. And our principal saw that over the course of the week, attendance was dropping off right? So Fridays was the lowest attendance day. And so what he decided and his team decided to do was to put their core learning into Monday through Thursday, and then with the students design activities on Friday. And they're based in the community, right? And they're based around development of work skills. So some examples are students will go, and the students get to choose where they go, right, based on their career interest. So some students go to the VA, the Veterans Association, that's just right down the street from them, and they volunteer. They play cribbage. They talk to the veterans, build relationships there. Yep. Some people will go to the Paramount. I have a gorgeous mural in my office where each student learned ceramics, and they made a different piece of a sign that spells out McKinley. And it's so beautiful and heavy. I can't even hold it. The wall doesn't even hold it up. So it just really gives the students an opportunity to engage in activities that most of them haven't had the resources to be able to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And it gives our community a chance to see typically marginalized, underserved yep. students in a different light. And see, oh, look at the brilliance that this child has, right? They just have never gotten the opportunity to show it to us before.
Yeah, you're impacting beliefs beyond the educators, and that kind of an opportunity, that's powerful.
It's, you know, in St. Cloud, it's very important when we look at, you know, we are judged by our communities on our test scores, our graduation rates, our four-year graduation rates. For the district, which includes McKinley, level four settings, hospital programs, which is not anything that our neighbors experience, right? Our graduation, four-year graduation rates are not where we want them to be, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not making excuses for that. None of our team makes excuses for that. When you look at our seven-year graduation rates, they're about the state, right? We have students who have come to us with limited or interrupted formal education, and 4 years isn't enough, right? When you look at our test scores, you know, often our, you know, many of our schools have a 40% turnover rate in terms of students. So 40% of the students who start the year, totally different by the end. And so we're judged on the standardized assessment that is taken once a year. And they're not where we need them to be, right? But they're not all that our kids are. It's only a very bare fraction. You know, one thing I was reading an article this weekend. It was a study done by Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And it looked at underprivileged students in the Baltimore public schools in 2021. And for a year, they did vision screening and they got glasses for students. And the test scores of those students through the roof, right? Wow. But how easy would it have been to say, look at their scores. They can't do it. They don't care.
Yeah.
Then disengage.
Yep. So a lot of the listeners to this podcast are instructional coaches and school administrators. And I'm wondering if you have some thoughts on best ways that they can support teachers who are struggling with that. They don't care thought. I think you've kind of labeled one already for us, which is creating the opportunity to listen. And to voice it in a safe environment. I'm wondering if you have a couple other items you might add to that.
Yeah, a couple of things that I would say is modeling, right? Modeling and setting the example, right? That we're in it too. We understand the work that's happening because I was a school counselor. I am not a teacher. I know that about myself, right? I know that what I need in a workplace is not. Is more autonomy in my day. I come from a family of teachers and I respect their work so very much, right? So I think being able to model that we understand the challenges that teachers face, taking off their plates what we can, because truly we demand a lot from those who are serving, whether it's 22 5-year-olds all day long or 160 17-year-olds, right? That's a phenomenal ask of any human, and to do it in a calm state of mind with, you know, positive frameworks of every child, right? That's a lot to ask. So I think being in and modeling, right, that expectation, and then demanding nothing less than we're going to change that first thought. And that takes a lot of courage. It's not always a popular thing to do, right? And I think we have to do it, building those pockets of community and collaboration so that we aren't standing there on the island all by ourselves shouting, this isn't okay, right? But really being persistent and warmly demanding that we expect better and different from our adults, that that's not an acceptable belief about kids.
There's times that I know working with coaches and administrators that we can fall on the same thought about a teacher.
Absolutely.
That the teacher doesn't care.
And
my finding is that that's a very small amount of the time. So you're just better off assuming it's not the case. And so it's the same kind of probing and problem solving that you're having to address. So even though a teacher's actions might look like they don't care, 99.9% of the people that are showing up in the morning are looking to have the best result that they can.
I just so appreciate, right, that that's your perspective and that you call that out, because I firmly believe that also, right? It is not an easy job, and people could go get paid different, right, in a different space. And so, right, they're coming because they care about kids. It just, there are barriers getting in their way.
Yeah.
Right? And so how, and keeping that perspective. And I always felt like as a leader, my job is to clear space, right? To clear space for teachers, for counselors, for families, for kids, right? Because I was gifted that positional authority or influence, right? It's to really give them opportunity to shine. So what is it that we need to do for our teachers who are seeming disengaged, or our kids or our families who are seeming disengaged, because there's something getting in their way.
Well, I saw that you you work with a school slogan, a district slogan of every kid, every day. Wondered if you'd want to talk about that a little.
Yeah, that was something that when I was starting as superintendent two years ago now, this is year two for me, somebody asked me, well, what do you believe? What's your title? And I was like, well, every kid, every day, right? And for me, that means that we give of ourselves to see each child, right? To see their strength, their brilliance. And it could be every adult every day also, right? That really we are spending time in relationship, right? That's what we're privileging. And then out of that grows the things that we need for success for our kids and for our adults.
Well, Lori, I valued reading the piece that you wrote and the conversation with you. I've really enjoyed. We will post the link to your article in the podcast lead-in. I'm wondering if there's a way that people who have questions or comments they'd like to share back with you can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. My email is just my first and last name, laurie.putnam@isd742.org. And easy to find on the St. Cloud Area Schools website. I am on LinkedIn at laurieputnam3, at laurieputnam, and on X at laurieputnam3. So lots of opportunities to connect in this very, right, in a world that is both highly connected and not nearly as connected as we could be.
You got it. Thanks again for sharing this with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the time to talk with you.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter or LinkedIn at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.